This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And today is it's March, and I am celebrating the 5th anniversary of Joy on Paper. So
yay!
I am
yay!
And,
yippee!
And I have in the studio with me Rita Moreau. And Rita is she is many things. She's a wonderful author of cozy mysteries.
Thank you, Patsy.
Okay, it's so nice to have you here. I want to really thank you so much for being here. And Rita also does our special book buzzes, which are promos for authors.
Yes, yes. And I am happy, happy to be here. And congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. And I wanted to talk to people this month that those authors, I might have spoken to them in the past, or they were just dreams of mine. And this author I spoke to recently, and actually he is back by popular demand because Robert Dylan Schneider is really an amazing author, and he wrote a book called Decisions, which we talked about last time he was here. And I want to thank him for this book on behalf of everybody. Bob, are you there?
I'm right here, Patsy.
Well,
congratulations to you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. As I said, I wanted this month is a really special month to me. It's been 5 years, and it's been quite an amazing journey. And I started the month off by talking to Martha Grimes, who is the 10th Mystery Writer of America Grandmaster to be on my program. So as I was looking who I wanted to talk to, you came right to my mind immediately because, a number of things. One, in a way, it was because of your book Decisions, which is a fantastic collection of practical advice, as you say, practical advice from 23 men and women who shape the world. And one of the people, of course, you mentioned in there is President Truman. And my father, who received a Silver Heart for D-Day, some action in D-Day, had come back from America, and he was scheduled on the day of the bombing of Hiroshima. He had been scheduled to head for San Francisco to fight in the Pacific. He had fought, in Europe, and he was not looking forward to fighting in the Pacific because he was afraid of snakes. that decision of President Truman's was so meaningful to, just in my life. I might not be here if he had not made that decision. So all of the stories you have in this book are very poignant and very important.
Well, from me to a major decision maker, Patsy Gill, I'm delighted to be on the show. And I think the decisions made this week, this day, over the new virus in the United States are going to be extremely important to the future of the country.
Well, Bob, I was actually afraid that you would cancel today because I just want to remind my listeners that you are really the go-to guy in one of the most important people in America, in the world. Everybody knows you as a person who gets out there in front of problems. And so I know that you work with many famous companies, famous people, and so much is happening in the world today. So I was actually afraid that you'd have to cancel.
I'm delighted to be with you on the show. I frankly would not have missed it for anything. So it's a real pleasure to be with you.
Well, let's talk now. I mean, we're talking decisions as you brought this subject up. Wow. Are you working on you know, some of the decisions that are going to be made out there, because it is people are getting, you know, really nervous.
We're putting out a broadside today, Patsy, to about 2,000 people, trying to put the coronavirus in perspective with SARS, the Spanish virus, and other terrible moments like this in history in the world. The potential for the coronavirus to spiral out of control is huge, and one of the reasons is not the virus, it's actually high technology. Technology lets us know instantly now anywhere in the world what's going on. 20, 30 years ago, that was a very different story. It took weeks and oftentimes months and sometimes never would people find out what was happening in the world. Well, that's changed now, and the coronavirus is known by everybody, and everybody's very concerned about it. Just imagine walking the streets of Italy right now. Nobody's on the street. Imagine how terrible it is getting off that cruise ship in Oakland, California. No one knows where to go, but they do know they're going to be quarantined for 14 days. There's a lot going on here, and we're really just seeing the tip of the iceberg.
Well, you know, as I said, with your position in the world and knowing so many important people and having worked with so many important people, it's I'm just wondering on your own decisions, how you're making these decisions right now. Certainly, I wouldn't want to be the thought of being on a cruise ship and being in quarantine is terrifying, but of course, even people are worried about being quarantined in their own condos.
I'm trying very hard, Patsy, to offer people ideas and ways of thinking about making the decisions they have to make. They shouldn't be afraid. They should have the courage to go out there and say, I'm Joe Smith or I'm Sally Jones and I'm going to make this decision. They should do that. On the other hand, they shouldn't do something foolish and put themselves in harm's way. So it's a matter of knowing the two or three things that would put you in harm's way that would be things to avoid, obviously. One of them, for example, would be something my wife did just last week. She went to an old person's home to show her art. That was fine, but the fact is most old people are now contracting this virus. She's okay right now, but I wish she hadn't done it.
It's you know, for you, and you've been doing this for so many years, and your company is a major company. You've been thinking through different possibilities in all range of subjects. So your people and you must be really, like, the brainstorming is something that's really happening here on a full-time basis.
We put out a report every year. Actually, twice a year. And this report is this year entitled Anxiety, because there's a lot of anxious people out there trying to figure out what's coming. Do people think Mike Bloomberg is finished? Has he dropped out of the race? Absolutely not. Mike Bloomberg is still very much in the race. The chances of Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden beating Donald Trump are zero. It's not going to happen. But Bloomberg could. And if there's a floor fight at the convention, and Bloomberg gets the nomination, this will be quite a race.
Whoa, I'm making news here. I don't normally make news here. And then, you know, when I invited you, I wanted to talk again some more about the decision makers that we didn't have a chance to talk about last time, and also to talk about your other work, because one of the things that you have been, as you mentioned, you have hired thousands of people, and you have looked at first of how people can, you know, develop their careers and the changes that they make. Now, Rita Moreau is in the studio with me today. And one of the reasons I wanted her here, she does, I think I mentioned to you that we promote books beyond the simple interview that we have. I like to continue promoting books because authors really have such a limited window of opportunity when their books are released. Now, Rita was worked in the IRS, and at one point in her life, she decided, I want to be a writer. So I had wanted to really talk to you about that kind of decision. When you make a life-changing decision, what it entails. And, of course, also talk about when you I love your book about when you are starting a job and the things that you should think about. So you really, I want you to tell us what, you know, some of your ideas, because you're a deep thinker and it's wonderful to have you here with us.
Well, when I started a job, I started from kind of this position. I had come out of college and I sat in my bedroom with my dad, and I was embarrassed. And I said, "Dad, I really don't know what to do." And he said, "Well, I could get you a job selling shoes downtown at one of the local shoe stores." He said, "You could also go to Vietnam." I knew it was happening in Vietnam. Eventually, I did go into the service, but I didn't go to Vietnam. But a third, he said, he reached into his pocket and pulled out a bus ticket. "Here's a Trailways bus ticket to New York. Why don't you go there and see if you can cut the mustard buster there?" I knew nobody in New York, nobody. But he said, "Go get to know people and see what will happen." And I ended up running a big company for 25 years, and now the one I'm in now for 29 more years. So I'm very happy that all that happened.
It was a great decision. But once you got here, well, to New York, once you got there, it was up to you to find that entry. And you, in your book, The Critical First Years of Your Professional Life, I think you share a lot of the things that you learned. That people don't, so many times young people, they're not told simple things like, I like how you talk about get to know the grapevine, or learn to, you know, take wisdom from the elderly or the older people in the company.
Right. I mean, when you're starting out, you should really be a person that wants to soak up every bit of imagination, insight, fact that's possible. And then you can build on that. As you get to the middle, you begin to distribute what you've learned to other people to help them. And as you get to the top, and your listeners are on the top, you're in a position where you can get ideas from people from throughout the organization that can really be very, very helpful to you and to the organization. So knowing how to start out, knowing how to get to the middle range, and knowing what to do when you get on top, absolutely just critical. Jack Welch passed away just a few days ago, a good friend. Jack Welch used to run General Electric. I one time was with Jack probably 30 years ago, and I said, "Jack, where's your security man?" Jack was the head of General Electric. And he said, "Security man?" And he said, "I don't have one." And here was a guy who was in charge of another company, not anywhere near the size or scope of GE, but 20 security men. Another guy had 15 security men. Jack Welch had no security men because he had the strength to know what was that. And I like people like that. I enjoy working with people like that.
Now, of course, one of the things that happens in a company, when somebody comes into a company, it's important to form a relationship with your boss, to get to understand what the boss is looking for, and just how to maneuver around a company.
Very important. And I think the first thing everybody should ask the boss is, "What can I do for you?" And when he really doesn't have an answer, look at his resume, his CV, and find out if things that he did when he wasn't really in place, he really enjoyed. Are those things you could recommend to him?
Well, now, Rita Moreau, as I said, is here, and one of the things that she discovered, that changing careers was a major step in your life, wasn't it, Rita?
Well, it was, but I have to confess, I waited until I was retired, and mainly because then I had the time to devote to writing.
Well, but when you're working on a book and it's requires the same kind of dedication and perseverance
it really does.
You need in a company.
And being a writer, it's a solitary profession. When I was working, I was surrounded by, people, your coworkers. So I found that the decisions I had to make as a writer was a learning phase because this was a new profession, and it was everything. It was running a business. I worked for years for the IRS, as you said, Patsy. I was an appeals officer. So doing a business, it was totally different. And it was every day. It was learning through writing.
Now, Bob, when you take on a company and, you know, one of the things I was impressed when I read what Maria Bartiromo wrote about you, that, you know, you've guided thousands of people through the business world. And tell us some of the stories behind that book and about what you do.
Well, Maria is a good example. She is a remarkable talent on broadcast. And when she does something special, we try to bring it to the attention of other people in broadcast. Let's say Maria does a spot on Larry Kudlow, who is one of Donald Trump's top advisors. We make sure that people in the White House see it. We make sure people close to Kudlow see it. We make sure that economists see it. So Maria is a very good example. But there are dozens more that need to get the message of what people do out there and to get it out there in a way that's positive and constructive. So look at the message. Say to yourself, who does it affect? How can I tell them? And what ways do I use to get that done?
Now, what are you doing when I talked to you last time about promoting decisions? Because decisions is a wonderful story. Each of the stories, the 23 stories, cover people that sometimes are expected, but a lot of people that you cover in that book are not expected. Like most people don't. In this sort of at this time, you know, they might not remember everybody. So of what stories do you want to tell about the 23 people that you talk about in decisions?
Well, most of the people who make decisions are forgotten. I mean, nobody really remembers Louis Pasteur and what he did. Very few people know Jonathan Gutenberg developed movable type. Very few people outside of people in the Bank of America know that A. Giannini developed an opportunity for young people to come to the United States and get into the banking field. And he founded the Bank of America. So most people are not celebrities. They're not recalled. And it's important for books like Decisions to bring up what they are and who they've done. Every one of your listeners, I believe, Patty, should say to themselves, who are two or three people that I know who have made life different for me, for people around me? That's a good exercise for your listeners.
And, of course, inspiration, because for people who, you know, I start this program, I always say this Joy on Paper is a program for writers and those who dream of writing. And I like to tell people, you know, you have might not have an idea for a story, but you can look around to the people that you have met in your life, perhaps family relatives, perhaps a teacher, somebody who influenced your life, and just start there and write a book, because that alone can be an inspiration.
Absolutely, and always bet on yourself. Bet on the things that you know you can do, and you know how to do, and how you can make a difference through them. That's extremely important. I mean, you've been on the air for 5 years, Patsy. There's no reason that you've been on the air for 5 years, except you're good at what you do. And people should know that. And so now you'll be on the air for five more years and five after that. And it'll be great. Think of the number of people you'll influence by decisions you make to have guests on the air, by your talking about people and the difference they make. It'll be that kind of an experience for you.
Well, that's what, you know, I did discover this. You know, Bob, when I started this program, I had no experience. I knew nothing about broadcasting. I knew nothing about the radio business or the business model. I knew nothing. But I did it really because I had actually heard an interview with an author that I didn't like. And I said, well, that author deserves to be promoted properly. And within 3 weeks of that, getting that idea, I was on the air. And what I have discovered, as I mentioned, you know, I have spoken now to 10 Mystery Writer of America Grandmasters. I won't say which one, but one of them, when I contacted this person, nobody had contacted them for a long time, because that's what happens in the book business. You know, you have this release date, and they might give you some reviews, you get a splash, and then that's it. And it's very difficult. I did not realize that, because I was always a reader. I had read so many thousands of books, and I do have a phenomenal memory. Sometimes I can remember actually almost the page number where something, you know, is written. But I did not understand that authors really need someone, not just to promote them, but also somebody to reinforce that they have talent and that they're appreciated. Because sometimes you it's a solitary life for most writers. Of course, you're a businessman, so you already know you're important, and you have a following just among world leaders, probably. But for most writers, they don't, and they need that kind of reinforcement. And so that's what I've tried to do here, and that's why I brought Rita to help me here with these promos that we do. They're very short, but they bring the author's name back out there, which is, I mean, it's, as you know, it's the name of the game, having your name out there.
It's critical, and you'll never know, ever, really, how much that can mean to you when you try to put it out there. So the effort is really worth it. One day you make the effort, you'll hit the ball, and everybody will cheer in the stands. That's the real key here.
And I've had some authors who have now come to back to the program after hearing me, you know, like 4 years ago, encouraging them to write. They've actually written a book, and it's pretty great. You know, I'm so humbled by it that I did have this influence, or that people will, you know, contact me and say, well, this was really inspiring to me. And one of the reasons I wanted you back was because when we talked last time, you know, I can always tell if my listeners got something out of a program, because I will get these emails. I will have emails by the time I get home from the studio. It takes me about 10 minutes to get home to this. And there will be already emails waiting for me, people saying, whoa, that was good. I didn't know that. And when that happens, I get really excited. And so that happened with when you were on and we were talking about decisions. People had not heard of some of the people that we talked about. And so it was just very, again, humbling and very heartwarming to know. And, of course, you have done this for a long time. You've gone out there and just promoted people. So you know the feeling of how great it is to help somebody.
Yes, it is. And I have to say, when you start out on decisions or anything else, realize you're probably going to fail the first few times. But keep at it. Keep your nose to the grindstone, or your shoulder to the wheel, or whatever euphemism you want to use. And eventually, if the concept is good, it will make it.
Now, Rita's going to do just a little promo. You hold on and listen to it, and then we'll come back and we'll talk, okay? And
okay.
Just Rita's going to do a little promo so you get an example of the kind of things she does for authors. Go ahead, Rita.
Okay. Hey, this is Radio Rita reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz mystery. The Old Success, Richard Jury Mystery Book Number 25 by Martha Grimes, the recipient of the 2012 Mystery Writers of America's Grand Master Award. Here's the buzz. When the body of a French woman washes up on a wild inlet off the Cornish coast, Brian McElvey, divisional commander with the Cornwall Police, is called in. Who could have killed this beautiful tourist? The only visible footprints nearby belonging to the two little girls who found her. While McElvey stands stumped in the islands, Inspector Richard Jury, 20 miles away on Land's End, is at the Old Success Pub, sharing a drink with the legendary former CID detective Tom Brownell, a man renowned for solving every case he undertook. Well, nearly every case. He discloses that there was one he once missed. In the days following the mysterious slaying of the tourist, two other murders are called in to McElvey and Jury's teams. First, a man is shot on a North Hampshire estate. Then a holy duster turns up murdered at the cathedral in Devon. When McElvey and Jury decide to consult Brownell, the retired detective tells them that the three murders, though very different in execution, are connected. As the trio sets out to solve this puzzle, Jury and McElvey hope that this doesn't turn out to be a second ever miss. Martha Grimes is a best-selling author of more than 30 books, 24 of them featuring Richard Jury. The recipient of the 2012 Mystery Writers of America's Grand Master Award, The Old Success is written with her signature wit, sly plotting, and gloriously offbeat characters from one of the most fascinating mystery writers of today.
Okay, well, thank you, Rita. You see,
you
this
welcome.
Is you see, Bob. This is the type of thing we do that I just started doing a few years ago, because an author like Martha Grimes, although she's written so many books, unless you remind people, they forget. And so, I think that's one of the things that makes me happiest about doing this program.
I understand that. I did say to the people I work with, there are dozens and dozens of shows, but I keep your eye open for your show, because it's one that makes a difference. And they did, and I'm on. And I'm really happy about it.
Well, thank you, because I want to go back to decisions, because I didn't get to talk to you about everybody last time. One of the ones that I really wanted to talk to you about, and it's funny, it was an unexpected unexpected choice. Tell why you selected Pablo Picasso.
Picasso was an extraordinary painter. Were there painters better than Picasso? Absolutely. But Picasso combined his painting with his political views. He was a major factor in the Spanish World War. And he brought art into the world of making a difference out there. Picasso also had a number of various periods. His blue period, his regular period. And in those periods, he did different things and created different products and brought those different products to us. So Picasso was an extraordinary man. I remember meeting Picasso in Paris probably around 1970, maybe 65. And he was full of himself, he was full of life. It was all going to happen for Picasso, and it did. And he made it happen. He didn't just sit there and let it happen. He said to me, Bob, he said, there are tens of thousands of artists out there. If I want to cut through, what do I have to do? That's really the challenge that Patsy Jones has, in my opinion.
To think of meeting Picasso is really fantastic. Tell us a little bit more about that meeting.
Well, Picasso is an elegant man. He is gone now, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But he ate fruit throughout the meeting incessantly. And he would offer you fruit during the meeting, and was smart to take it. But Picasso kept ahead of everybody in the meetings. Picasso was also somebody who didn't paint, but did line drawings during a meeting, and he would catch the spirit in your face or the unhappiness in your face, and he'd reflect it. And that was also extremely interesting. Finally, Picasso had ideas. He wasn't a person who just said, well, I'm going to accept the status quo. Picasso had thoughts and ideas and suggestions on how to improve society. Some of them made sense and worked. Some of them did not make sense. It didn't work. But Picasso was an easy selection.
Now, did you meet Muhammad Ali? Did you ever have a chance to meet Muhammad Ali? Oh.
I met Muhammad Ali. That's helpful.
Yeah? Because he's also definitely his decision was at the time really surprised people.
Stung like a butterfly, but hit like a bee. This guy was fantastic. He had a big heart and he really cared about things. Why did Muhammad Ali change his name from Cassius Clay to Muhammad Ali? Well, that happened because of a very famous black who said to Clay at the time, "You've got to change your name and be one of us. You have to do that." Clay did it, and the man was Malcolm X, and they were off and running. And it really helped catalyze the black movement. There are wonderful blacks out there that I'm sure everybody on the line knows. There are very few people who are black and who happen to be like Muhammad Ali that can make a difference.
And he certainly did. He certainly did. As a matter of fact, I'm hoping to have an author on who's writing a sort of a definitive story about him. And I remember my father talking about when that happened, and it was funny, you know, when he was called Cassius Clay and he changed his name, although, you know, at the time there was a lot of thought, you know, this wasn't the right thing to do. I remember my father supported it and said, yes, you know, he should be who he feels he is, and he should stand up and be noticed, and that he was against the war. Was, you know, even though my father was a military guy, this was my father thought that, you know, that was the right decision for him. And so I remember that, you know, hearing talk about that.
He did it, and it punctuated his views and punctuated the views of tens of thousands of men and women around the country. It was important to speak out in the way that he did. So people said, hey, let's think about this, in which they did, obviously. Now, Vietnam was not a positive war. It was a difficult war. There's a great film called Biloxi Blues. It was written by Neil Simon. And Biloxi Blues starts by the star of the show saying, the Second World War was really a good war. And it was a war that we were involved in. It was a war against some bad guys. And we liked things. We liked the girls. We liked the uniforms. We liked the songs. All very positive. And then he said, in Biloxi Blues, at the end, he said, there was one thing about Biloxi Blues. He said, at the end of the show, he said, I loved it. And he said, why did I like it? He said, because we were all young and anything was possible. And that is important for everybody to think about. Whether you're 80 years old or 24 years old, you're young and anything is possible. You're limited only by your ideas and by the way you think about things.
That's true. Absolutely. You know, if I had told people that I was going to do a radio program, everyone would have said, don't do it. They knew me. I was very shy. I was the one who was always, you know, reading a book in the corner, or the one, if there was a karaoke machine and everybody else was singing, I wouldn't sing. So if I had told people that I was going to do a radio show, they would have been shocked. But I just did it, and thank goodness I had in the studio here, opposite me in the control room, Big Ed, who he's a big guy, and there's something calming about him because he's calm even when, you know, things happen. And I didn't know at the time that live on air you can lose a call, or the sound can go down, or all sorts of crazy things can happen. But he's always very calm in there. And I just look across, and it's so nice that he's calm. So it is, you know, we are so dependent on what our decisions are. And I think that's why, where you can help people with your insights into decision making.
Once you make a decision, stick with it. Don't change it. Come to the decision after complete sorting of facts and ideas that you can base your decision on, which in effect applaud your what you've just done. That's extremely important. Don't waver and don't go to a second position.
I like that, because sometimes you have a tendency to say, well, maybe I should have went this way, or maybe I should have went that way. So you got to just stick to your guns.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So, Robert, what do you think right now, this of the situation in the world? How much are you involved in working with major decision makers?
I think right now we are panicked in the world. We don't know what the Chinese are going to do. We don't know what the Russians are going to do. There's word that our allies around the world dislike the United States right now. The reason they dislike the United States is we're not as predictable as we used to be. Donald Trump is not a predictable person, and he's not going to be a predictable person. So in that kind of a sense, you have to fund for yourself, and that's literally what's going on now in virtually every country in the world. Trump is very smart. He's called the shots here.
And, you know, exactly that, when they used to think, and there were many countries, you know, I lived overseas. I think I mentioned to you when I was 21 years old, I moved to England because I wanted to live near where Jane Austen was born, which is, you know, that was my obsession. I had this obsession. And so I moved to England. So I spent a long time in Europe. I had businesses in Europe. I traveled in Europe. And also then I moved to the Middle East. So I had a lot of experience. So I know at how people in Europe sort of think about America. But, you know, they still all want to come here. It's always funny to me. I would hear people criticize America, and I'd say, hear people, you know, say, you can't do this or you can't do that. But in the end, most of them, when I came back to America, they all, you know, contacted me. Oh, we want to come over to America.
America is a great place. The Four Freedoms are great. The founders of the country did the right thing. No other country operates this way. There's very little chance, almost no chance, of overthrow by the military or by anybody else. America is a place you can express your ideas and not be attacked for them. America is a place where you can grow your reputation and it's taken for what it is. No, America is a great place.
Oh, it certainly is. And that's from those, of course, you know, world leaders and people around the world, and I've experienced living in other countries, so I can attest to the fact that there really is nothing like America. And so I was, you know, so thrilled that when I found your first book about making a change in career and thinking about changes in your life after I had started the program, about a year after I discovered your first book, and I was then so impressed that you had these insights and exactly this, stick with it, because I was sort of wavering, I wasn't sure, and then things just happened. I got the Poet Laureate on the program, and I think after you talk to the Poet Laureate, you're like, okay, well, if I can talk to a Poet Laureate, I can talk to anybody.
And you've done a great job over the years, no question. The Poet Laureate might have been the first, but he sure wasn't the last.
Oh no, it's just been wonderful, and to talk to somebody like you, because you are as I said, the go-to guy in so many situations, and people look toward you to help them out of problems. And I just was so impressed with your work and with your books. So I just want to tell people that the most recent one, of course, was Decisions. And I wish that every high school would get this book and give it to their kids. And I certainly, as a homeschool mom, I've already recommended it to my different. You know, I'm beyond the homeschool. My that was a while back, but now I still have friends in the homeschool associations, and I've been telling them that they should get your book, because this is exactly the kind of book that we, as homeschool moms, we're always working that our kids will make the right decisions.
And well, I hope they get the book, and I hope they get the next one, which I'm reading right now.
That's what I was going to ask you. I know, I knew, because there was so many people that you can add to this. So who are some of the people that you are going to be writing about in the new book?
That is a very tough decision, but I think I will write about Muhammad Ali again. I think he was remarkable in so many ways. I might write about Whitney Houston. I might write about Miles Davis, the trumpeter and the singer. Remarkable people in so many different ways. I doubt if I'll write about any politician. I might write about Clark Clifford or Bobby Baker, who did a lot of the heavy lifting for Lyndon Johnson. I don't know how many people on the line here remember Clifford or Baker, but they were major factors. I might write about Edward Newman, the man to see in Washington. Really quite a remarkable human being. I might write about some wonderful Italian people that I know who founded the Ambrosetti Conference, which is today a terrific organization that spread all over the world. I might write about some French people, Jacques Delors, or people like that who are very different from French leadership today. So I'll definitely write about Mao Zedong and Zhou Enlai, things they did. So it's a whole universe of people to pick from.
So you're definitely going to be busy. First, I think for the next few months with all of the things that are happening in the world, and with, I'm sure your group is working very hard to get out there and to tell people and inform people about the situation. But it's fun, isn't it? Fun to be able to. It's really, you know, have this extra career as a writer.
It's a lot of it's a real kick, and the one thing you can't do is get it wrong. You've got to be right every single time. I was criticized in the last book, the one that's currently out there, on Steve Jobs. People thought should have put Jobs in the book because he's done so much to change technology in the world, and he has. So maybe Jobs will be in the new book. There's all kinds of things like that. They're not just 30 people who made decisions and changed the world. There are hundreds of people. We need to single them out. Everybody listening to this show has a chance to change the world.
You're right. That's it. We have this ability, and sometimes people, they need encouragement. This is what I've discovered, that even famous people, you know, they're writing, and then they're not sure. You know, I was surprised sometimes by writers who, I think, you know, they're very famous and they're selling very well, but they're still unsure if the next book is going to sell well or if it's going to be a success. So that's why I just love to do this. I can't call it a job because it's just a pure joy for me to be able to talk to authors and to be able to encourage people to write. And then, of course, I'm trying to do more and more. We need readers, so I'm working also on various groups to encourage readers, because I think one of the things that draws people, and this happened when I interviewed you, you know, you have a book, it's called Decisions, and it's about 23 people, but what happened is I got, you know, when I got emails from people, they would say, well, he was so interesting. He really cares about the subject. He really understood these people. And he didn't pick. And one of the things that they liked is that you did not pick just obvious people. I mean, you had a wide range of people, like Alexander Fleming. Nobody really had heard. I had quite a few people, as a matter of fact, a few people who emailed me, and they said, well, you know, I had read about him when I was in college or high school or something, and then they went back and they looked it up after they read your story about him. So, you know, you've done here a service also.
I've tried very hard to do that, and I think that I'm excited about the future and the next book, and I hope you'll have me on if you when it comes out.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely.
Definitely. Because as I said, you are actually backed by it's nice when I have sort of the listener demand of who they want back on the program. So,
well, thanks for having me on the show.
Well,
Bob, I really appreciate it.
Bob, I really appreciate it. And everyone, you can go to Amazon and get Decisions, Practical Advice for 23 Men and Women Who Shape the World. And it is by Robert L. Dillenschneider. And while you're there, look at his other books because it's just, and if you know any person starting off, the critical first years of your professional life is the perfect book to give them. And there are so many, you know, we're coming up to the time soon, graduation, and people are saying, what book should I give, you know, to my nephew or, you know, my son or daughter? Give this book, Critical First Years of Your Professional Life, because it really opens a young person's eyes to what they have to know about when they get into a company. And now with full employment out there, you can be picky and you can find a job, but it's up to you to find and work your way up in a job, right?
It certainly is. Patsy, many, many thanks for being on the show.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Bob.
Bye-bye,
Bob. Okay.
Wow.
Isn't he amazing?
Very interesting.
Oh, he's
very interesting. Wow.
Unbelievable. Wow. Unbelievable. And this book, really, for, you know, so many of the things that he writes about in Critical First Years, people never think about doing. And he has it all there for, it's really a wonderful book. So, we have time. Why don't we do
another book buzz?
Do we have something for Peter Riva?
We certainly do.
Yeah, let's
okay,
go do
let's
that.
Okay, let's do it. Okay, this is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz, The Path, the Tag Series Book 1 by author Peter Riva. Life is good in the New Republic of America. In fact, it's perfect, thanks to a supercomputer known as the System that controls everything from the weather to the production of food. Everyone's basic needs are met. Too bad Simon Banks is about to break everything. Banks is a brilliant codifier whose job is to design glitches in a virtual duplicate of the system. But when glitches appear in the real system, Banks uncovers a hidden intelligence that threatens the course of humanity. More terrifying is the realization that everything he knows to be true is actually a lie. Banks finds himself in the preposterous position of saving the world. And frankly, even with the help of some friends, his chances are slim. For people who love pure sci-fi, this book is a treat. The thrilling, mind-bending novel tells of future America where a dangerous new intelligence threatens the very survival of humanity. Two reviews of The Path, the Tag Series Book 1 by author Peter Riva.
Okay. Wow. Well, it is a wonderful book, and I highly recommend it. And I highly recommend Rita Moreau's book. So let's just talk a minute. You have books out there on Amazon, and I know you're working.
I do.
One of your books that I love particularly was Bribing St. Anthony.
Bribing St. Anthony actually was my very first book. So that was a decision in itself to write. I will say I enjoy writing these books. And just like our Bob was talking about, making these decisions to do these things is very important. But once you make that decision, you realize that you can do it. You can do it. You can write a book. Just like you say every time you have your program, Patsy, do it. Do it. Make that decision and do it.
Yeah. And you did it, and now you're working on a second. So the first series is about
Mary Catherine Mahoney, who I must say is maybe an alter ego, an accountant, myself, a number cruncher. And she uses her accounting skills to solve mysteries. She also has two aunts, Aunt Anna and Aunt Sophia, Greek aunts. I grew up in the Greek family, just like MC.
Which is why when she has a book launching, she serves Greek food.
Oh, lots of Greek food, yes. From a great restaurant not too far from here, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, and sometimes a writer's life is solitary. And I realized when I first retired, it was like, gosh, I'm retired. This is what I've been waiting for all this time. And then I'm like, well, what am I missing? You're missing the socialization. So that is a hard thing. But it's something you get used to. And it's rewarding. It really is.
And then you start going to book fairs, book shows, book conventions.
Patsy Gill, who invites you to come to
her on paper.
And
where were you just mentioned? You were mentioned in...
I was. I was thrilled to be mentioned in Sisters in Crime, March Quarterly Magazine.
Wow.
It was a surprise to me. And I thank fellow author Carol Perry for saying, hey, you're mentioned in this magazine. And the article dealt with cozy mystery, and it dealt with different types of humor. And I'm in the kooky humor, and I would agree with that. I have kooky characters.
That's right. She's kooky characters. She has nuns in her.
I do.
Bribing St. Anthony. And she's been known to show up dressed as a nun. So qualify for the kooky edition.
Yes. And when you start writing these characters, you never know where these characters are going to take you.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's just thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Patsy. Doing these
promos. And we're helping authors to keep their names out there. And that's what you need to do because it is a business.
It is a business.
And sometimes, you know, it's a hard business.
It's a very hard business. But nothing rewarding is easy.
That's right. And so I'm so, so happy that you're here today. And I, of course, that you mentioned Carol J. Perry.
Yes.
Whose books, Witch City Mysteries have just taken off.
Oh, they have.
She is so successful.
Kensington author.
Mm-hmm. Available at Barnes & Noble. She's often, and I think right now, on the end cap and their display.
Important.
In over 3,000 stores of Barnes & Noble. So she is like an amazing person.
Yes.
Because everybody, remember what I always say, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into streaming video, a major motion picture, or Carol J. Perry. And you, one day, Rita Moreau.
My dream.
That's right. A series on the Hallmark Channel.
Mm.
Woo! Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be.
It would be. And your new series is going to be about RV campers.
Yes.
And boy, we don't have anything like that on the Hallmark.
Well.
And they need something new and exciting. So,
fingers crossed.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you, Patsy. And thank you for all your motivation.
Okay. And say something nice to somebody today. And I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed.
He's saluting me.
And he's saluting you. And he's saluting everybody. I love being saluted. I really should have been in the military. I would have been so good. I would have been a general. Okay. And Rita's saluting me.
Yes.
So, that's really great. Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye, everybody.